The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. I'm your girl, Jacqueline, alongside my co-host, Mr. Mark Ellis. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, Jacqueline, it's that time of the year where we're getting very excited, not necessarily about the fall movie season yet. You probably are, but we're also thinking about that other season that kicks off, pun intended, at the beginning of September, where I'm going to be in Vegas, opening NFL kickoff week. So I'm just basically staying in my cave and doing nothing. I'm not giving myself any treats. I'm not giving myself any alcohol until I get to Vegas, because as we know, when you combine the NFL and Las Vegas, I tend to have some cheat meals.
Yeah, cheat meals. And that's kind of a cheat existence, right? To go play as an adult child, like in Vegas with like football toys and gambling and betting, which that is very adult childlike behavior. It's like, we're going to play games on the games that the other games are playing, and we're going to get drunk, and there's going to be strippers in proximity and gambling, and it's all going to be fun. Like, this is the adult version of sleepaway camp that I want to be a part of. Because it happens when it happens, I never am, because I am always in the middle of award season.
Yeah, you're probably going to be at like TIFF or some fancy festival while I am living out. Let's be honest. When you watch the Tom Hanks movie Big, it's nice that he went back to being a little kid at the end of that movie, because if not, he's turning into Mark Ellis so quickly. No strings to hold him down, no family to worry about, no significant other, just child adulting his way through life.
Honestly, very similar to our subject today. Let's keep it real. That is what you call a great podcast transition, ladies and gentlemen, because we're talking about Thor, the man-child himself, God of Thunder, but probably would be better off and wouldn't need this movie if he just went to therapy. But we're going to be ranking the entire Thor franchise, ladies and gentlemen, from the first one starting in 2017 all the way to the grand whopping total of the fourth, which just released on VOD this weekend. It is a short ranking episode, but we have somebody that is really, really great along for the ride with us, Hector Navarro. He is, I would just say, an all-around awesome internet person in general. He is someone who I just like hanging out with and getting to like talk movies with. He's also the host of like several things all over the internet, including the thing that I was supposed to remember, but I've already forgotten.
Heroes Reforged. This is the thing.
I've got Mark Ellis with me, the Schmodown champion. And so he knows exactly what podcast is Hector's. Mark?
It is Heroes Reforged. And in my Schmodown DNA, I also have to mention that the first Thor came out in 2011. It was Thor Ragnarok that was 2017.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Did I say 11? You're right. No, actually, you know what this is Jacqueline is looking at the ranking.
You're looking at the ranking.
Yeah. And I'm not looking at the actual dates. And also, I'm slightly blind. And that 7 looked like a 1.
Anyway, it's Heroes Reforged. Hi, Hector.
Thank you, guys. I'm so happy. That was such a lovely thing to say, to be able to, and I feel the same as well, to be able to hang out with Jacqueline and Mark and geek out about movies. I always feel like I learn something from you guys whenever I hang out with you. I just love talking about movies that we love. So thank you so, so much for allowing my qualification for this podcast to be, he has all the Thor action figures. We should have him on. And I have them all.
I don't know if that was the qualification.
That's it.
Lucy was like, we like talking to Hector and we know his number, so we're going to call
him. Lucy sent me a separate email just checking. You have all the Thor toys, right? I said, yeah, I have them all. I got Gore the God Butcher. I even have the Surtur Fire Demon. Let's go.
Are they opened? Are they opened?
Absolutely. Not only are they open, Mark, here's the deal. The new Thor had that great look with the helmeted, like that helmet that Chris Hemsworth wears, right? Mm-hmm. But he only wears it for about a second in the movie. The beginning of the film also had the Ravager Thor when he's hanging out with the Guardians of the Galaxy, right? So both of those, each of them got an action figure. The problem is,
of course they did,
that there's no unhelmeted head for the full-on Thor. So what I did is I took the Ravager head, which still works, popped that sucker off, put it onto my Thor. So I have a custom, more movie-accurate Thor as we left him at the end of the film, Love and Thunder. He kind of left the helmet behind, and there you have it. So does that answer your question, Mark? I even forgot what it was.
Can I tell you something? This is how you can tell a true fan, because a collector would have kept them unopened, but a fan cannot resist the allure of opening them and playing with them in the garage, in the bathtub. And so, Hector, I applaud you.
Yeah, no, that's really great. We're a fan house as well here. Mark has been to my house and seen this collection. I am not going to make this podcast a complete toy podcast, because we absolutely could. But I do have to tell you, Hector, I did zone out halfway through that, because I listened to an entire month-long conversation about how it was wrong that Marvel Legends put Korg in separate pieces of the various Marvel characters of the previous Thor movie, which meant that you had to buy all of them so that you could get a complete Korg. So I'm sorry that I started to stare into the middle distance.
It's okay.
But
hey, listen, there's a couple different Korgs. One of the Korgs, the first Korg I bought... The first Korg I bought was came in a two-pack with Jeff Goldblum, Grandmaster. So if you didn't want to have to go and get a bunch of different toys and you just like Ragnarok Korg, you're good to go with that set, baby. That's all you need. But yes, you're describing the build-a-figure, action-figure approach. I've been in that game since like 2007. I know it. I feel the pain. But I also, I can't lie, I like collecting everything and... Anyway.
Oh, my God. In case you guys didn't know, we are definitely going to nerd out on some Thor, including the toy franchises. But let's get folks a little level set on where we are. I said it incorrectly, but when you're talking the Thor franchise, let's see where they rest as far as tomato meter and audience score. Thor Ragnarok, 97% certified fresh, 87% audience score. We also have Thor at a 77% certified fresh and a 76 audience score. Then we have Thor the Dark World, which is 66% fresh and a 75% audience score. And that, as of this recording, fresh off of its current year release, 65% fresh and a 77% audience score for Thor, Love, and Thunder. So, gonna go ahead and start it off with you, Hector. Is Rotten Tomatoes ranking, because this is a ranking episode, wrong about the Thor franchise?
Thank you, Jacqueline. Rotten Tomatoes is wrong because I feel like critics were a little too harsh on Love and Thunder. So my Thor ranking is very similar, but basically at the bottom I have The Dark World, then the original Thor, then Love and Thunder, then Ragnarok. Ragnarok is the king. It's going to remain on top, but I think that Love and Thunder is a better movie overall than the first two Thors.
Excellent. Mark, for your sake here, I'm going to ask you, do you think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong or not? And if so, what is your personal ranking?
Okay, with my heart and my head, both of them are saying that Rotten Tomatoes is wrong for different reasons. So with my heart, with something I'd love to rewatch, then I think Ragnarok is number one. And then I have Thor 2, I have Love and Thunder 3, and then I have The Dark World 4. But if I'm going with my actual, like, if I'm looking at the movies themselves, what I think is the best movie, I actually think it's the first Thor. I think it's 2011's Thor, and then I'll go Ragnarok, and then I'll go The Dark World, and then I'll go Love and Thunder. And so I think they're all solid movies. Even The Dark World, I think that they're all solid movies. I know The Dark World kind of gets lumped in with, for some reason, The Incredible Hulk 2 is like the worst MCU movies, but I think they're both really, really good. So these are all good movies we're talking about, but I think the hot take that I'm going to have during the course of this episode is that the original Thor is still, I think, the best one.
You think the original Thor is the best?
I said think. It's a hypothesis. It's not a law yet.
It's not a law yet?
Well, that's the thing about having Hector on the show is that, like, as our listeners know, from time to time, my opinion, though firm, can be malleable. And Hector is one of those people that can really talk me off a ledge or onto a ledge, depending on the movie.
Hey,
or the
franchise. I'm open-minded too. We'll see where this goes. Maybe I'll change my ranking by the end of it. But open to hearing everybody's take, everybody's opinion. I just also agree with Mark. I really do like this franchise. Of course, I'm a big MCU fan, but I think that these Thor films, even the ones that are considered weaker, The Dark World, the first Thor, there's stuff in those movies I love, 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 love. Come on, Chris Evans cameo in The Dark World, top tier. Fantastic moment, great moment.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to be that girl to be different and be really sort of like manic pixie on this one and just say that my favorite one is the first Thor. I love the Shakespearean aspect of it as well. I love that it's Kenneth Branagh. I also adore Thor Ragnarok for different reasons. I think that the Taika trilogy is going to end up being a better trilogy of films. It's another reason why this franchise ranking right now is weird for me, because we really have two of what was and two of what it will be. And so this really isn't even a franchise by franchise standards. It's just in the middle. So that's what I'm going to give for my answer. Thor is my favorite. The rest are tied for number two. But we'll get into that after we, you know, check in real quick with our boy Tim Ryan so he can let us know what the critics were saying all the way back to 2011 and then coming back to today with Thor Ragnarok. Tim, take it away. 2 minutes
with Tim. We recently celebrated our 100th podcast, and looking back, we spent a lot of time on Marvel, both the MCU and various characters from Marvel Comics. So if you can't get enough, please check out our episodes on Iron Man, Spider-Man, Eternals, Morbius, Venom, Blade, The Avengers, and the MCU TV series. We also covered Thor: The Dark World on a previous show, and now we're going to do a brief overview of all the Thor movies. Because among the stars of the MCU, the big guy has had a relatively spotty track record. I say relatively because all his movies are fresh. Here's the rundown. Thor from 2011 is certified fresh at 77% on the tomato meter with 291 reviews, and it has a 76% audience score. Thor: The Dark World from 2013 is fresh at 66% with 285 reviews, and it has a 75% audience score. Thor Ragnarok from 2017 is certified fresh at 93% with 439 reviews, and it has an 87% audience score. And finally, the latest, Thor: Love and Thunder, is at 65% on the tomato meter with 410 reviews, and it has a 77% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a fresh review for Ragnarok, Kristen Lopez of Culturist wrote, "Beautifully filmed with serious kinetic energy by director Taika Waititi, with a crackling script, Thor Ragnarok is a heap of fun. Cue immigrant song!" However, in a rotten review of Thor: The Dark World, David Fear of Time Out wrote, "This is a superhero movie that feels like it might have been made by anyone and no one at the same time. Simply space filler before the next big team-up movie." So that's Thor. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark. It's hammer time. Back to you, folks.
You know what? That's the best part about doing this. Like, I'm glad for Tim reminding me, because, you know, we're 100 deep now, so they do blur. They tend to blur on occasion. I did know that we had covered Thor: The Dark World already, and so I know I have my opinions on that. But I probably should have like listened to them at least, so that way it's not like looking like I'm schizophrenic. But hopefully, in movie talk, my thoughts on Thor: The Dark World are going to continue through as we rank the Thor franchise. So I want to ask really quickly, though, before we get into movie talk, Hector, what is, of all of these ones, why do you think this is maybe a character that doesn't rank as high?
I think critics, and I guess kind of mostly audiences as well, they don't love this franchise as much as the other MCU franchises or characters, because I do think that the series as a whole is a little uneven. I think that the first two entries played a little safer, and I think that entries 3 and 4, they do make some big swings. So it doesn't have that sort of cohesive vision of like, we know what this character is. So like, for example, with Peter Parker, Tom Holland, or even with Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. And I also think that just at the core of it, Thor, the character, should not be everyone's favorite superhero. He's kind of an acquired taste. It's a really out there concept. I don't think that most Marvel characters are designed to try to be appealing to everyone, except for maybe Spider-Man. And I think that Thor falls into this category of like, he is very bombastic and operatic and theatrical and fantastical, but also silly and goofy and epic at the same time. And so if audiences and critics just kind of don't buy into that and that's not their flavor, then they're going to, I think, gravitate towards other types of Marvel superheroes, MCU characters. So like, Thor is not, should not be everyone's favorite superhero, but to some people, he is their favorite superhero. And I think that that's awesome.
What about you, Mark?
You know, Hector makes a lot of interesting points too. I just feel like Thor isn't as well known from being a superhero. People I think know the name Thor and they equate him with Norse mythology, but actually being the lead of a superhero movie or being a comic book, I just don't think that it ever rose to the level of a Superman or even a Spider-Man or an Iron Man. And so when you look at how the MCU sort of kicked things off, I think Iron Man was clearly the right play. And then they had a character that I think is more recognizable with the Incredible Hulk next. And then Thor is such an interesting experiment because that was really the litmus test, for me anyway, for the MCU being viable as a ongoing franchise, as an ongoing storytelling monolith. And it, because of Thor's success, I think is why we still have the MCU today. Because if any one of those movies leading up to the Avengers is a dud, then you probably don't have the MCU to the same level that we get to experience it now. And I think a big reason for that being so successful is that people bought into Thor. Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man, that in retrospect anyways, a slam dunk. The Incredible Hulk, we love seeing a big green guy. Thor was the ultimate test and it passed.
I mean, yeah, I think it is absolutely a test. It was definitely a critical time in the MCU, which we can sort of break down the very long 11-year journey that we've had with Thor to sort of ranking this franchise when we break down the four films within it in Movie Talk. So, Brian, cue the music. So actually, let me just ask you maybe about your bottom pick. Why do you feel so strongly that Thor the Dark World should absolutely be worse than Love and Thunder? Because you definitely talked about what you thought Love and Thunder didn't deserve to be there. But why that?
I think that you guys have done a great job of praising why that first Thor film is great. And it has a great villain in Loki and Loki's origin with the Frost Giants. And then Loki uses the destroyer armor to wreak havoc in New Mexico. And it's all really solid. It was so solid, in fact, that when they were making the Avengers movie, they were planning to have Loki and Red Skull team up originally. But then it was the director of the Avengers that was like, I think we can just do it with just Hiddleston. Hiddleston can carry it as a villain. That's how strong that first villain aspect of the first movie was. You cut to Ragnarok, Cate Blanchett killed it. Just so good. A great like tear down of the character, right? Thor gets his hair cut. Thor loses his hammer. It's a great exploration for like bringing him to rock bottom so that he can rise back up. Love and Thunder, I think, is somewhere in the middle with a fantastic performance from Christian Bale as Gore the God Butcher with a really interesting story. I mean, I think that it's no surprise that they went with this character from the comic books because out of all of Thor comics history, that villain, Gore, really jumps up as being really, really interesting and challenging for Thor and just visually very cool. And they didn't go with the Voldemort look like he has in the comic books. They let Christian Bale be Christian Bale.
They still called him Voldemort, though.
They did. They did. But that performance is really, I think, compelling and I also think that what Thor goes through is interesting enough to kind of carry you through the movie. But when we get to the Dark World, so for me, a Thor villain that jumps out is a great character named Amora the Enchantress. That's a female villain. They did not pick that character for the second Thor movie. In my comic book brain, I'm like, that's the obvious choice. So for them to use Malekith, not a great villain. Kind of wasted Christopher Eccleston, who's a great actor, you know. And even then, just the visuals, at least, of the Dark Elves sometimes are pretty cool. I don't know what else I would have done, but sometimes it's very kind of muddy. So I just think that for me, Thor the Dark World doesn't really get going. It doesn't have that fire or that spark until they bring back Loki into the equation. A lot of the beginning of the film is very paint by numbers, is very, frankly, kind of boring. I like bringing back Jane Foster and trying to give her somewhat of more of an active role. And again, Love and Thunder for me absolutely achieves that and beyond. But they're trying stuff here. It just feels like the Thor movie can't quite break out of its own rigid rules. Mm. And the reason I rank it the lowest, I still own it. Guys, I own it on 3D Blu-ray. Of course I like this movie, but I still would rather rewatch the other three Thor films for those reasons.
Hey, not a bad one. Mark, again, I think you've definitely already spoken about why you placed the first Thor at the top. I agree with those sentiments as well. Why are you keeping the four on your ranking?
I would co-sign the villain argument that I love a good villain, even though I'm not necessarily the guy who's like, oh, well, if we don't have a good villain, we can't have a good movie. I'm here for the superhero origin story. That's what I love. And I think that might be why I'm feeling a little bit of fatigue with Phase 4 to this point, is that we've been introduced to some promising new characters, but it still feels like we're not giving them a whole lot to do. Whereas with Iron Man, you see the origin. You see the origin of the Incredible Hulk. You see the origin of Thor. It's exciting stuff. You see the origin of Captain America after that. And so with Thor in particular, I felt like that first movie also blends the action, the stakes, and comedy better than The Dark World did, which I felt like was trying to force a little too... The comedy in there felt a little more forced than it did in the first one.
Yeah.
And with Ragnarok and Love and Thunder, look, these are really enjoyable movies, and I don't want anybody going away from this podcast, whether you're watching or listening to it, thinking that I don't like these movies, but they're very different in terms of, this is Taika Waititi playing in his sandbox, and I appreciate that sandbox, but it's more relying on the comedic aspect, and really, especially Love and Thunder felt like a music video. Which, again, I'm the guy that thinks Rocky IV is the best movie of the 80s. So I'm never going to say that a two-hour-long music video isn't a good thing, especially when the soundtrack is Guns and Frickin' Roses. But if I'm looking, I go to comic book movies. I like the laughs, but I also want to feel epic. And I want this to feel big, and I want this to feel important. I want the weight of the world to be on these shoulders. And with the first Thor, I felt that even if it was just this little town in New Mexico that's being threatened imminently, you felt like, oh, okay, now we got hints at Asgard. This guy is eventually going to be in the Avengers. You felt an excitement for the future that was palpable. Walking out of Ragnarok and Love and Thunder, had a great time, had a smile on my face. I wasn't immediately thinking, ooh, what's coming next?
Yeah, which I think is honestly the reason why half of the reason why we do these episodes, half of the reason why we talk about these franchises this way. It's 9 times out of 10 just trying to speculate about what we think can happen next. Because yeah, that is the MCU now more than it is the films themselves, because they're such a clip, and they keep coming in such a clip that I think folks are honestly like skipping over the part that you talked about, which is that Love and Thunder is really fun.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hector is someone that likes the four movies really well, as I think we all do. What do you think about that? Do you feel like it is a start in the middle of the song? Do you feel like this is an interesting four movie arc?
I really, really, really accept it, but I can see some of that Matrix code of them pivoting after Thor 2, which didn't light the world on fire, right? I can see how they made the sausage. And again, it's that big swing. It's them being like, okay, we liked the movie Boy. Let's take a meeting with Taika Waititi. Let's see if he would want to. This is before Hunt for the Wilder People, by the way. This is when they hired him.
And actually, it was What We Do in the Shadows.
It wasn't really fantastic.
It was What We Do. They liked Boy, and they liked the movie that came out after that.
Yeah.
What he did with What We Do in the Shadows, I heard, is what got him his first conversations with Marvel.
For
sure. Because of, no offense to that, that was actually a movie where they had no money and had to be very ingenuitive. And if you look at the Marvel directors they like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
TV people that came from very small budgets, more so than people that have directed 5 Fast and Furious movies.
But for sure. They want character people. They want directors who are going to be able to bring that up. And Hunt for the or What We Do in the Shadows has some of the best movie characters. They're fantastic. So he takes the meeting, and I think I remember them like, I think I remember Taika saying they gave me a bunch of Thor comics and he probably started looking at them. And it gets weird and wacky in the 80s with Thor comics when writer artist Walt Simonson was coming in and did things like turn Thor into a frog. And I remember when Taika tweeted a picture of Frog Thor and people were like, oh my God, he's going to do it. But I think he was just like absorbing the material and being like, this is crazy. I'm going to do this movie. It's already been confirmed, but like, this is the kind of stuff I'm attracted to. So I can see that pivot. However, in preparation for this podcast, I rewatched the first Thor. I rewatched The Dark World. And I think that even the clues for where the character would end up, they're still baked in there. I still think that the first Thor movie, I think fans overall are too harsh, the comic book fanboys, and you know who you are, they're too harsh on the Taika-ness of it because they went, oh, he turned Thor into a joke. But that fish out of water humor is baked into that first time we meet him. That's part of the appeal because we cannot relate to the godly Asgardian aspects of Thor, but we can relate to his familiar relationships, his relationships with his brother, the jealousy, his relationships with his mom and dad. And we can relate to him feeling like an outsider when he's on Midgard, when he's on Earth. And that stuff stems from some J. Michael Straczynski comics that's what he decided to lean into.
James Blake's entire storyline is that.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's
and
all
even,
there.
Even going back to when Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were doing Thor in the 60s, they had him walking around Manhattan and people in Manhattan, you know, the background characters of these comics that look like the cast of Mad Men, all these white men in business hats are like, look at this. What is he doing here? New York, this is crazy. That's part of the whole appeal of the character. And I also think that if we're talking about some of the retcons, I loved the retconning of Taika Waititi actually showing us Jane Foster and Thor's like relationship in Love and Thunder, just the flashbacks of that. And I felt like those flashbacks still fit into the time period of the Dark World, but they still feel like the Thor that's a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more kind of modern and human. And the other thing, and I want to underline what you're talking about, Jacqueline, about how weird it is to rank these movies. The other thing I want to mention too is that like I'm also taking into consideration whatever they did with these characters in the Avengers films. Mm. What Thor goes through in Endgame is a huge part of the reason I love Ragnarok and Love and Thunder as bookends, you know? And that's something that even if it wasn't Taika initiating that, he went in and he helped with the script. He went in and kind of massaged the lines that Thor was saying to make him sound more like the Ragnarok Thor. And I think it's a great, you know, story arc in there. And even whatever he goes through within Avengers Ultron, which isn't a whole lot, you can still look at that and go, he spent years on Earth with these superhero characters. Maybe that's why he loosened up his language a little bit by the time we get to Ragnarok and he talks more like, Surtur, son of a bitch, you're still alive. Like it, you know, you kind of have to look at that whole bigger picture of the MCU.
Just the way that he does the video game scene, which actually from what I heard was actually Hemsworth that suggested the video game scene from, yeah, some Hector's with me on that one. But it's just that. It's just that sort of little, this guy is now not a fish out of water, but he is weird enough that he is a 35-year-old dude speaking in iambic pentameter to a 15-year-old across the... Again, this is your franchise, Mark, I will say.
That's the brilliance of it to me. And look, in sports, we always say you're drinking the Kool-Aid. And so with movies, I call it eating the popcorn. And maybe I'm just eating the popcorn on the matriculation of Thor's character. But I always looked at him from the first Thor movie when he lands on Earth to what we get with Love and Thunder. I think that when you include the Avengers films, which you have to because he's such a prominent part of some of those movies, is that he's letting his new friends rub off on him. Yep. Anytime you get into a new grade in school or you get to a new facet of life and you meet a new group of friends, a new group of coworkers, their sense of humor is going to rub up on you and vice versa. And so when it's Tony and Cap and they're just going back and forth with these quick quips, Thor, and they're calling him Point Break and stuff like that, I think Thor's absorbing some of that stuff. And so his sense of humor does increase with the movies, particularly from Ragnarok to Love and Thunder. And so I think that that's a natural fit because he's with a bunch of really funny people who happen to also have the same goal of saving the universe. But I think that the best piece of comedy that we've still seen in Thor, it's really tough because there's so many great running jokes in the last two, thanks to Taika. But the setup for who Thor was and who Thor was going to be in the Avengers on Earth is in the first one when he walks into the pet store and demands a horse. It's so funny. It's and that's also why even when Chris Hemsworth isn't a part of the MCU and he's in a movie that I thought was a stinker like Vacation, he was the best part about that. And he's one of the highlights of the Ghostbusters movie from 2016. This guy really can do comedy, which pains me as a comedian who does not look like Chris Hemsworth to say. It's like, pick one or the other, dude.
I mean, no, that's fair. Actually, I think we actually have a moment like that from my interview with them from Rotten Tomatoes, where basically I think Natalie Portman and both Tessa were like, it's kind of not fair for him to be like nice. I think Tessa was like, I just fully expected him not to be somebody that I think is great and awesome. And then, of course, he turns out to be this lovely, great human being. And it's so not fair. And I'm like, yeah, and he's talented. It's really not fair.
It's another reason I just rank Thor 1 and 2 a little lower, because it's like in those movies at that time, they weren't quite tapping into the Hemsworth comedian. Because his skill set is so varied. He can do the drama. He has moved me emotionally when he's talking to Rocket Raccoon in Infinity War. You know what I mean? Like, Hemsworth can do that. But he's so gosh darn funny. And for the first two movies to kind of put Thor through that more classical pace, I frankly, I'm like, I want him to be funny, though. That's what I'm thinking. And then I get to 3 and 4 and I'm like, this is Hemsworth being very funny. Thank you.
But see, I think the difference is where it's baked in. Like, there was a Shakespearean bent to the first one. And I think the second director went more tragedy. This is the guy that just directed the Sopranos film. He does a lot of the Sopranos TV shows.
Frigga dies in that film, and that Thor has to.
And so I really think he was going for, okay, if Branagh started us off in the Shakespearean path and he gave us more, I would say, middle of the road, some comedy, some drama, why don't I lean heavy into Shakespearean tragedy, literally tragedy? And you could tell that they were setting up Ragnarok to be the other tragic moment, right? Well, they completely changed course with that and made the tragic moment comedic and welcomed by the end of Ragnarok, right? Yeah. So
it's so tragic.
It is tragic. So that's what I was just about to say. I think
blows
all that,
up. But, yeah, but,
I think all that, like, character development and stuff is there. It's just under a blanket of comedy. Sure. So therefore, people get the medicine in the food. And I don't know. I am of a firm belief that these are herky-jerky. I believe character development is an engine that idles very much in this franchise, depending on the film and depending on the moment. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like that's why I feel like it's herky-jerky. And I also feel it's herky-jerky because he has an entire cast of characters in the first film that we can't even make more than a flashback by the fourth. Mm-hmm. And there's not a single one of them that makes a long appearance in any of them other than his girlfriend, who is half dead in one, half gone in the other, and half in love in the first. So I'm like, I don't know if I could really even call this like an overarching story, because the dude at the center, obviously this is the Thor franchise. He goes through some stuff. But if the guy at the center has what I consider to be a herky jerky, I wouldn't even say, like, if I could see that across it, I don't know if this is something that you can really say is a full arc all the way through.
Here's the question based on that, Jacqueline, though, to Hector. Because, Hector, I mean, I know that you've been pretty much a boot on the ground with the fan reaction, what fans are saying, since the first Thor movie came out. So when our good friend Tim Ryan is talking about the critical reaction, I'm just curious, was the reaction to Thor, the character, in 2011... and a little bit with The Dark World, was the reception more positive amongst the hardcore comic book fan base than the more comedic slant at Thor that we get with the last two? Or because I do hear that point sometimes, that it almost feels like the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, where the first couple were like, oh, we're really scared of Freddy, even though he has these one-liners, but they're not comedic. And then by the time we get to Nightmare on Elm Street 6, he's basically the feature act at the Funny Bone. So was that a discussion amongst hardcore comic book fans?
I think so. And I think, you know, I can't speak for everybody. I can only speak for, like you said, my boots on the ground, me observing what I'm observing. I as we all know, we tend to see more of the negative reaction to stuff. People are more vocal about that than they are about just like, I like that movie. And then they won't talk about Star Wars The Last Jedi. Like, normal people will see something like that and just be like, I'm a normal person. I'll go home now and have a life, but I enjoyed that film. But the really hateful people, those are the ones that kind of spew that stuff. But not to say that folks who don't like a comedic Thor are hateful, or that they're in the wrong, or that their opinion is invalid. I think it is. I just think that my perspective as a comic book fan, I'm also a movie fan. I also understand that, like, these have to work and operate as films, and character arcs have to function, and movie critics who've never picked up a comic book have to go in and be like, okay, got it. That's what this is. This is what Asgard is. Rainbow Bridge. Got it. I just think that I can look at some of the comic DNA and justify why certain decisions were made, and justify why Taika's coming in and making it really, really funny, and still be like, but that's still baked into the Thor character in my mind. I don't see it as something that breaks the character. I don't see it as something that is a full reinvention that completely upends anything that they did in comic books. I feel like most Marvel MCU movies don't do that. Rarely is there a film that comes along and just completely, I'll give you an example, maybe Agent Carter from the Captain America movies is like such a great expansion on very little of a comic book character that it's like, okay, yeah, we accept this version. This is what I like. Maybe Yondu, Michael Rooker, is a very different Yondu than the comics. Those kinds of things. But at its core, I think Thor is still similar to those comic book iterations of the character. And even when Taika was doing Ragnarok and he was reading comics, he had said that he was looking at stuff like the Jane Foster, you know, turning into Thor, and saying like, there's such good storytelling happening in this. It's such great character work, that those are the kinds of things that he would be inspired by to go and put into his comic book movie. I don't know how much of these movies are made by a committee. I don't know how much of this is already pre-planned. You know, we knew that the name Ragnarok was chosen before Taika was like brought in to do this third film. But I don't know if like Love and Thunder was given to Taika by Kevin Feige in the parliament and being like, it needs to have gore. We need to bring back, like, I think a lot of that was probably Taika's pitch, is him going, I want to bring back Natalie Portman's character specifically too, because he probably saw a lot of that nastiness online. And he's like, what would make some of these macho comic book bros who want all these superhero men to be emotionless and badass and killers and, you know, that kind of just like, oh, you think your superhero, you know, you think your superhero is not a badass? You're living in a dreamland. That kind of attitude. I think Taika looked at that and he was like, what if I made my next movie about Thor being in love? Like, yeah, if that's the thing that he wanted, was to be in a relationship. It's another reason I love Love and Thunder, is because there is an element of Taika trolling that portion of the audience. And meanwhile, I'm over here eating my popcorn. Like Mark said, I'm like, I love this. Please troll them. I'm enjoying this, but I can also see how it's still a tribute to the comic book. It's not disrespectful. It's not, you know, Taika's not coming in being like, I can do this better than the comic books ever did or anything like that. So,
I think what's interesting, and I'll just say this about the MCU for anyone that pays attention, is they take archetypes that are in cinema and then they overlay that with comic books. So Logan is a Western that happens to be comic book characters. Ant-Man is a heist movie and happens to be comic book characters. Thor is a Shakespearean Hamlet tale, happens to be comic book characters. The weird thing is as we start to run out of these archetypes, look at the ones they haven't really done. Romantic comedies,
right?
Broad comedies, absurdist parodies. These things are areas that are in all of the DNAs of these movies, but they have never gone what we say full bore.
Right.
And I think that is going to be the next thing, because like legitimately, like they tried a little bit of it in Hawkeye, but there will be a MCU musical coming soon. Yeah. Like they're mad that DC has beaten them to the punch with Cage de Folies. Like they're doing this whole thing. And I think that is the part of anyone who maybe dislikes Love and Thunder that I'm getting mad at them about. It's like, what is the MCU rom-com that you feel this movie is not doing well? Or are you mad that this movie is not a heist movie? Are you mad that this movie is not a Western, which are a little bit more palatable in this sphere for a lot of people? And I get why, but it doesn't mean they aren't valid.
I think it's rom-coms, just like, because when you watch a rom-com, you can watch Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan fall in love and it's like good for them, but you're not, they didn't save the world, you know? And so if you've seen 10, 15, 20 movies leading up to that,
Mark, wait a minute. Didn't they save Seattle? I'm pretty sure they saved Seattle in that one movie, I thought.
Yeah. You know what? Now that I think about it, they met at the top of the Empire State Building because King Kong was climbing it. And right. So they had to knock him off. That is right. But it's like we've seen, you know, every Avenger movie up to that point with humor and with some relationship, trauma, turmoil, love, whatever you want to call it. But then they save the world at the end of the day. And so if you're looking at something where the point of this movie, sure, Thor saves, he saves multiple worlds in Thor: Love and Thunder, but he also, and he saves every god that wasn't already got by Gore, but it's not really the point of the movie. And so the point of the movie is just for Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan to figure out that they actually are DMing each other the whole time through AOL. And I don't know if that's just the stakes being reduced, but I'll tell you this. Had the best time in the theater of the year at Thor: Love and Thunder. There's movies that I liked a lot more. Your RRRs, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Top Gun Maverick is the best anything I've ever seen this year. But
you and Quentin Tarantino agree.
Sitting next to Jacqueline at Thor: Love and Thunder, you and I were both dying laughing at, and I don't know if this got, if it got wearisome for other viewers, but the screaming goats were killing me in every scene.
Yeah.
And the ex-girlfriend sort of weapon battle between Mjolnir and Stormbreaker I thought was genius, and I never wanted either one of those running jokes to end.
Oh, I really did love that. I also did love too the girlmance, the girl, the Galandines moment, because I do think, look, the MCU has always been sexless. It's just the way these are because they're mostly kids' movies. But I just really want to thank Chloe Zhao and Taika Waititi for giving us lots of butt and boob in their movies, because they don't need to be sexless. These, if they can save the world, they can get laid.
Yeah. Agreed. They should.
Just kidding. No, I
don't know. It helps having a butt like Hemsworth. But
yeah, it does. I want to make sure we talk a little bit about the villains before we get out of here, because for the longest time, Loki was the most, I think, loved villain in the MCU, let alone the Thor franchise, obviously. And then Killmonger came and he kind of, in my opinion, dethroned, because like that dude was on it. I'm sorry, that dude was on it. But, you know, Killmonger, Hela, even you can get some of the minor ones like Carl Urban's character. I don't even remember what that guy's name was.
Scourge.
Like, Scourge. Okay, yeah. I was like, is it going to be like Doug or Brian or something? I forgot. So yeah, we have Hela, we got Malekith and some of the other dark elves. Let's go ahead and talk through the villains. I think we all can agree that Loki's at the top. Can we all just like nod that and say probably?
You know what's so funny?
So
funny, Jacqueline, is that that character's had such an evolution that when I got sent the outline and the question was, what's your favorite villain in the Thor movies? I didn't even register that until you just brought up Loki just now. No joke. Because I'm like, oh, Loki. Yeah, like he died in Infinity War. Like, or there's the Loki who now has his own show, who's the time traveling, you know, that Loki. And they're in such a kind of a heroic light that I honestly didn't even remember that he was the main villain of the first. I know I brought it up
first,
at the top of the show.
First one,
but,
and Avengers. He was a villain in two movies.
And
in
he was double crossing in Thor 2 and double crossing in Thor 3. Like, yeah, he is that guy. And I think in retrospect, he's the number one villain, you know, out of the entire Thor franchise, and probably maybe even still in the, only because he just had multiple appearances. You know, that's the thing about Killmonger. That's the thing about
that we know of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yep. You know,
we don't we'll know see. Yet. We'll we don't see. Know where he ends Could up. I'm not, I have no
spicy.
Idea, but we don't know
I,
yet.
I actually think it's Hela, to be honest with you, if you're asking me villain, because I think Loki is a more fun character. I enjoy the character more, but straight hardcore villain, Darth Vader, Wicked Witch of the West, the shark from Jaws, that's Hela. Because Hela, you're not spending a scene reasoning with Hela. You know, you might get one line about like, hey, remember when we were brother and sister? That was fun. You sure you don't want to go back to that? And she's just ready to wreck your planet. At least with Loki, even though he's thinking three steps ahead of you and you know that he's going to figure out a way to escape or bend the events to his will, you feel like Loki can somehow be reasoned with, that you can promise Loki something down the road that will get you out of this jam. With Hela, there's none of that. With Hela, she is there to literally bring freaking Ragnarok. And that, plus the antlers, is scary as hell.
Yeah. Wow. And she was funny. And she was funny in a way that Christian Bale's Gore wasn't funny. And they both have great performances. But that's also why I rank Ragnarok above Love and Thunder is that Cate Blanchett would deliver this amazing speech. And then Hogan the Grim would say, whoever you are, stop. And she would be like, did you just not hear a word I just said? Like, I thought you'd be happy to see me. Like this great energy, this great vibe. And also just a knockout, just incredibly, it's Cate Blanchett. She looks phenomenal. She looks incredible. But I would agree with you, Mark. I think for me, Hela's my number one villain. And she also, you know, being a great comic book character that they pulled from the comics, it still so fits into what Taika was trying to do with Ragnarok, which is he's telling you about why colonialism is evil, what kind of effect it has on a people, why it's bad to cover up the bloody history of imperialist nations. He knows what he's talking about. It's a wonderful theme that's in there. It doesn't hit you over the head. And Hela is that person who is literally painted up on the ceilings of Asgard, but underneath whatever they kind of covered it up with to make Asgard look all nice and everything. So I love that Taika was able to come in and even critique the very premise of Asgard itself, you know, to really make you think like, yeah, you know what? Odin's not a great guy. He's not a good communicator. He's the reason, like you said at the top, Thor should be in therapy. It's all Odin. He's kind of a piece of work. And Ragnarok's the movie that kills him off in a very sweet way. But really, the rest of the movie is like Odin was wrong. And, you know, and it's Thor having to make up for the mistakes of who came before him. And it's
mistakes
wonderful.
Of his father. Any guy in therapy will come to those things. Again,
T'Challa can relate. T'Challa can relate.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend too much time on it. I joke about it, but legitimately, this was a man coming to terms with his mortality, coming to terms with where he is in life, the fact that he's unfulfilled in his relationships. Like, legitimately, come on, kid. All he needs is like a quirky little track and a meet cute in a train station, and this is like it. That is a rom-com and everything that it is built for. So I get it. And I also get why people are, you know, having their own particular thoughts about where it is, because it is a departure. And I'm not in any way going to like take away from that. I will say this before we sort of like get out of the talking about the villain section. I also do want to talk about, I would say, the villainous aspect of Odin is much more part of the mythology. Like, Odin is not a good dude, like, at all. He requires, he's very, like, I'm on top, you do what I say.
Yep.
Like, that is Odin, and that is what he lives for. So, I really think that that's, like, where he is, and this is the film that brings it to it. So, I would say that he's the best villain, honestly. And he does villainous things all the way through. But if you had me to pick which my favorite one is, I would definitely say it's Hela. Because I just felt Cate Blanchett looks amazing in leather. And Taika made that happen. And so, this is the thing that people don't talk about it. Not a lot of people are signing up to do an MCU movie with everybody. Mm-hmm, you know, certain directors with certain movies, I don't know if they all can command the MCU talent that's outside of the MCU to come in.
To emphasize that, you know, comic book fans, they tend to be very, comic book movie fans and a lot of that fandom is very pessimistic. Oh, great. We're never going to see Henry Cavill as Superman. We're never going to do this. We're never going to do that. And I try to be as optimistic as possible. And because the MCU is never ending, there's no end in sight. There's always the potentiality that they could improve what came before in a future installment. If people didn't like how the Mandarin was presented in Iron Man 3, because they didn't really do that version of the character, in my mind, I was like, just wait, we could still get something like that someday. Lo and behold, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, there's an incredible character, Wen Wu, played by Tony Leung, fully improved on whatever, and even had brought back Ben Kingsley to sort of comment on it, but let him be a part of the party. So I think that Taika being able to bring back Natalie Portman after it was like kind of either through rumors or revealed, she didn't love the fact that it was going to be Patty Jenkins, director of Wonder Woman, doing Thor 2. And then that didn't work out. And then they still made Thor 2 because they had to put it out in 2013, right? Immediately after the first Avengers film. And they bring in Alan Taylor, and he, you know, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, the general consensus is like, it doesn't really feel like an Alan Taylor joint. It's not, he's not putting his stamp on it because he's delivering the product that needed to be delivered. So Natalie Portman was talked about by fans as like, great, we'll never see Jane Foster again. Natalie Portman's such a great actor. What a waste of that actress. It's too bad, so sad, because she was so fantastic. But then they brought back Kat Dennings in WandaVision. And then they brought back Natalie Portman. And I think it's, you're absolutely right, Jacqueline. It's Taika reaching out to her, pitching to her, well, you can come back and be Thor also.
Yeah.
How do you say no to that?
We're going to give you more to do.
Come on. Well, that's awesome.
Another thing I said, dude, Natalie started off in action, The Professional, and mm-hmm. worked through action, even through the Star Wars franchise. She wasn't just, you know, getting rescued in every scene. She did have like her own action stuff to do in that too. And so I do think she has V for Vendetta. I think she has like an affinity and a like to do this type of work. And so I do think it was probably frustrating for her to see that she couldn't be a part of that. And I love getting to see her kick butt. And in Love and Thunder.
And as SNL has showed us, she's also extremely funny. So that's another, right? It's another thing that they foul-mouthed and funny. That's another thing that Love and Thunder tapped into a little bit more, obviously, than we saw her in the first few Thor installments. So, yeah.
Don't disagree. I want to give Christian Bale a little bit of love as Gore. Although it is a divisive character, and I think I know where you fall on it, Hector. So I'll ask you, Mark, where do you feel about Christian Bale's Gore?
I thought the performance was tremendous. I thought the character itself was very interesting because, I mean, we talk about how funny Love and Thunder was. That first 5 minutes, whoo, it was like watching Up again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so sad and depressing. And then you see why he is the way he is. So you do have a little bit of a sympathetic bent towards this character. And I love just the guy who's just out butchering gods. Like, it's just such a, oh my God, the God butcher. And Bale in the scene where he's telling the story to the captured kids. I mean, it's just so sick and twisted. But again, I felt like as great as he wasn't out of place in that movie. He was necessary. And you really could not have saddled him with a sense of humor that Loki has or even that Hela has simply because the whole movie, it turns into a screwball comedy. And you do want some stakes. So I think that he did the job there. It just wasn't the standout feel of the movie to me. I left Love and Thunder thinking about how much I laughed, how great the music was, how cool the action was. And then it's like, oh, right, Christian Bale was in that and he was really good.
You were not
sure. You could go through a whole movie and be like, yeah, that Christian Bale kid, he's got something there.
But it's
maybe
the Killmonger thing too that Hector was bringing up earlier where, oh no, now we're never going to see Jane Foster again. Now people are speculating we might see Killmonger sooner rather than later. And so I don't think it's in the cards for Gore necessarily, but if there's a strong feeling towards Christian Bale's character, you never know what they're going to do with the MCU going forward, not just in terms of heroes or hero love interest, but also with villains.
Here's my pitch for that is that fans were complaining, well, we didn't see Gore kill enough gods. We didn't have enough of that dramatic stakes to really get scared by him. Well, first of all, I would say out of all the Thor films and out of many, many MCU films, Love and Thunder is very much a family movie and it's kid oriented. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's kind of beautiful. The ending scene where Thor empowers all those kids, even thinking about it, I can get chills. I really love that. I think it's awesome that young kids could see it and imagine themselves as a superhero. That's who these movies are supposed to be for. They are for children. They're from comic books. They were for kids. That's okay. But going forward, what if there's a future installment of some MCU project, Thor 5, whatever, where we see more of the fallout of what Gore did? And even that could affect some of the god characters that we met. Russell Crowe and his son Hercules, played by Brett Goldstein. Hey. Some of those characters could come in with, well, we have to now act this way because of look at the damage that Gore did. And we could still see more of that and feel more of that fallout. The same way that people who complain that Thor didn't get to have as much dramatic stakes in Ragnarok, I would say he goes through it in Infinity War right after. You know, he goes through this story in Ragnarok. He loses his father, but then it's this crazy zany story. He's got to fight the Hulk. He's got to defeat Hela, but it's Infinity War that he gets to sit there and have a moment and go, I lost my best friend. You know what I mean? Like that's what people, if they're looking for that, that can still happen in a future installment of something as it relates to whatever Christian Bale did. Would he come back to play the role again in a cameo? Maybe, maybe not. but that impact can still be felt in something going forward. See how optimistic, see how much of a cop-out that
is? I know, man.
I can just say none of these movies are bad because the movies aren't done being made. That's such a cop-out. I know, but I'm trying to be optimistic.
I mean, when you only have four movies and you're asked to speculate, what else is there? I mean, like, it's not as if they really have the entire roadmap there, but that's a good place to leave it, honestly, because it's the best place to leave this thing because we ended the film. Same thing with The Eternals, regardless of how these films are received. Same thing with Doctor Strange, this like last part of phase four where I think a lot of people are wondering where things are going. I think we're still playing with house money, and so I'm still excited. Mark, I'll let you have the final thought.
Of the Thor episode? My God.
I mean, not of the entire episode, but at least over the ranking portion, yeah.
The ranking portion. Rotten Tomatoes is wrong in my mind. I don't necessarily think Rotten Tomatoes is... I think they're inaccurate. I don't think that they're wrong because I could be wrong too. And depending on the given day, I might want to watch something that I can just get a lot of laughs out of. And if it happens to include Led Zeppelin, all the better. So I'll still stick with Thor. I think 2011 might be the best achievement of the four. But if I'm putting on a movie just for rewatchability, probably going to lean towards Ragnarok. But Love and Thunder, there's a lot of stuff I want to see again in that too.
All right. Well, that will wrap up our Thor franchise ranking talk. Brian, why don't you go ahead and cue the music so we can open up the mailbag? All right. We have a Ketchup Crew member, Alex Strappetta. Alex Strappetta. I hope that's correct. Hello, members of the Ketchup Crew. I'm a big fan of you guys' work. I've been listening to / enjoying every episode of this podcast. I finally decided to email you guys and suggest an episode on one of my favorite movies, 1999's Mystery Men. It feels like it's been an overlooked superhero satire that came out just before its time. The cast, the set, the humor is top tier. This is a gem that deserves a way higher number than its audience score of 57%. Thank you guys for all that you do. I'm eagerly waiting the next episode of this podcast. Thank you, Alex. I will say this about Mystery Men. That is young Donald Glover, if I recall. Is that correct?
I have never seen Mystery Men, Alex. I am so sorry.
Somebody
Mystery
is in
Men.
That. It's either Donald Glover or Richard Adewale. Somebody. It's Richard Adewale.
In what role? In what role?
Is I thinking of Mystery Team? Thank
That's
you,
right.
Brian.
Yes, you
That's
are.
That's what it is. That's
yep.
what it is.
Yep.
This is not Mystery Men.
I know. This is Mystery Men is Ben Stiller, Janine Garofalo,
yep.
Eddie Izzard. I believe Dane Cook pops in there at one point.
Yep.
And I remember the movie coming out and I remember being intrigued by it, but I remember just for whatever reason, it just didn't hit the I need to go see this movie, but I've heard great things about it.
I was right. It was the other black sketch comedy man that I was, it was Kel. It
yeah,
was Kel Mitchell.
Mitchell.
I was like, played, no, there's a played, random black sketch the, comedy person
the guy
in this.
Who could turn invisible only when nobody was looking at him.
Yeah,
I think
no.
that, I think a lot of this is, I feel like, yeah, Mystery Men was definitely ahead of its time in a lot of ways. Basically,
yeah.
anything commenting on superheroes before the year 2008, it
yeah.
was like, you're too soon. You're way too soon. But I also think that I would need to rewatch it. It's been years. I loved a lot of those characters. I loved a lot of the things that they would make fun of. I remember that, I think it was Hank Azaria's character, the Blue Raja, who was
yeah.
convinced that the main superhero of the world, who was played by Greg Kinnear, was the same as the top reporter of that same city. And they're like, and everyone else was making fun of him. I'm like, you're crazy. The reporter wears glasses. It's not the same guy. Like those kinds of jokes, I think, will hold up. But I also feel like just the movie making itself, the sort of directing and kind of editing, just the quality of the film itself doesn't necessarily live up to the premise and those.
It's very
and
Joe's
cast.
Apartment. It feels very
yeah.
MTV films
yes.
before they got budgets. Yeah, no,
yep.
I feel you on that one.
And Jacqueline, it's actually, it's Kel, not Keenan.
Did I say Keenan? I meant Kel.
No, I think
yeah.
you said Kel. I think
did
you said
I say Kel.
Kel?
Oh, did
I
you say,
okay.
Said,
okay.
I think
but
Mark
it's okay because I'm normally wrong. So
Mark I might have heard Keenan.
Because,
yeah.
you know, our generation, it's this synonymous. We hear Keenan, we hear Kel.
All right, that is it on our Cool Talk Mystery Men random 1999 movies. Honestly, highlight for me today. Hector, thank you so much for joining us, sir. Please let folks know where they can find and follow you on social media.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a pleasure and a highlight of my week. And you can find me online at Hector is Funny on Twitter and Instagram. And check out the podcast that I'm co-hosting right now for LA Comic Con called Comic Con Metapod Podcast.
Dig
so check that
it.
Out.
Man is booked and busy. Also, a TV movie recommendation, because you are a man in the know who watches things. So we want to know what you're watching that's got y'all jazzed.
Has anyone recommended Prey yet?
I mean, the internet has recommended Prey. Yeah. You're internet the first one to do it on the podcast.
I'm going to verbally do it. Prey is awesome. That movie rules. It's so entertaining. It's so great. I showed my mom the movie. She loved it. So that's always a great notification for me that, like, oh, this is more than just, you know, internet nerds love a thing. Like, it's fantastic. And as for TV shows, I would also recommend from the mind of the creator of Samurai Jack, Dexter's Laboratory, I'm going Genndy Tartakovsky's Primal, which is on HBO Max.
Oh, Primal is on HBO Max.
Season one is there and season two is happening. And Primal is like visceral and beautiful and unlike any animated thing you've ever seen. I adore it. It is so, so good. Kind of is also like Prey. So I feel like those are two good recommendations.
Please be like Alex. Email us at rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. I swear to you, we will try to get to it as quickly as possible, although it took over 100 episodes to get Goof Troop, so bear with us, ladies and gentlemen.
Danny Next, Fernandez was fighting for that movie from day one.
Seriously, I am so glad that she will message me anything else right now, because I love Danny text messages, but the ones towards
Wait, are you saying that we can just harangue you guys until you do the movie that you wanted? Because, hey, I've been waiting to talk about Disney's John Carter for 10
years,
folks.
Let me tell you, the person that you need to actually harangue is Lucy. Lucy is the person you should text at 6 a.m. at 4 p.m.
Disney's John Carter. Disney's John Carter, starring Taylor Kitsch and Willem Dafoe, is an underrated gem, and I think it's brilliant, and I could talk about the movie for hours.
Yeah. All right, Lucy. Let me get out of here before Lucy is literally like, what? On next week's episode, we are going to be ranking Jordan Peele's horror films, all three of them. All right, we'll see y'all next week on Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong.